So how much time do I have? 40 minutes? Okay. Standing between you and lunch, I'll try to be on time. Okay, so this is joint work with Agilos KIS from University of Connecticut and Yannis Tsiounis from a place called Best Quotes. Don't ask me what it is, because it's very unpleasant to ask somebody a question that he doesn't know before he even starts the talk. I just wanted to point out whatever. RSA Laboratories is now part of RSA division of EMC Corporation, if you didn't know. I told you not to ask these questions. Okay. So, I'm still learning what is EMC. Okay. So, the starting point for this investigation is that there are many privacy primitives that employ cryptography, and the literature in the last few years has had many of them, and it's a very, very active and very fruitful field of research. And in those, many times, because people are not just designing privacy primitives, but they try to balance the power, the anonymity and privacy of users, and the potential abuse of anonymity in a fair way. This is a notion that Silvio Micali puts in the mid-90s, and it's being carrying over to more current research. And so there are these trusted third parties that can trace the bad guys. In a sense, if you think about the regular public key infrastructure, the user comes, or nowadays even identity-based infrastructure, the user comes and whatever he does with his public key, let's say sign, privacy is lost. In the more privacy-friendly primitives, the idea is to act anonymously and only if there is a need to open the identity. And this is the goal of these third parties. And then some people suggested a multitude of agents that can be used for flexibility. So you can access different trusted third parties and also increasing the user's trust. What? That's a good question. So let's take a setting in which it's an international system. So maybe I trust the agent that comes from my nation. So if I'm Canadian, I'll go to the Canadian trustee. If I'm a Quebecois, I go to the Quebecois trustees, and so on. So, good question, good answer. I think people are laughing. We're dealing with since the basic thing is to provide privacy. Privacy is a multi-layer problem. You know, people sometimes talk about privacy in application layer, and then some other people come and say, but I know your IP address. And then there were solutions for mixed nets to hide this and so on. So what happened with this increased flexibility and trust, giving more trust to the user? What happened is that the choice of the agent is a layer in a privacy protocol. Yes? So if I choose, if in the example that Amos asked me, if I choose somebody from some nation, maybe I belong to this nation, and that's a bit of my privacy. Okay? So now the agent may reveal something about the user. And so in some sense, when we increase this trust, gave more power to the user to choose and allow multitude of choices, we kind of, the protocol itself now may violate privacy. So the goal of this this work is to hide the agent. One of the motivations. So, and then when the agent is hidden in such a system, it will be more private. We cannot find the actual bit. And then also, and this is fantastic, this I told David Chaum about our system. Immediately he came up with a second reason for the system. He said, aha, if I know your agent, I'm going to bribe your agent if I want your cipher data. So now you are kind of diffuses it, you know. If people diffuse it, then I have to pay more, I have to bribe half of the agents on the average, and maybe I don't have enough money. It's a typical David Chaum thinking, for those of you who know him. Okay. So here is the picture. So why it's group encryption? Because it's kind of analogous to group signature. A group signature is a signature in which somebody signs on behalf of a group and nobody gets to know who is the signer. Here, somebody is going to encrypt. There is a group of receivers, and in the set of receivers, the actual receiver will be hidden. So we want Alice to send a sealed envelope to Bob, but Bob is not the receiver. He's just the verifier. Because we want that this envelope can be opened by one of a number of certified agents. And here is the group aspect. And furthermore, we want that Bob cannot distinguish which one. As in group signature, in which we don't know the source of a signed message, who is the signer, here we don't know who is the receiver. This, you know, it can be some guy in charge of sending these messages or archiving the message and so on. And he's the verifier. This is Bob. Okay? So what are the properties that are the concern in this setting? So first of all, it's an encryption. So Bob should not be able to tell what's in the ciphertext. Beyond some properties of the ciphertext. That's the first thing. Second thing, anonymity. Bob should not be able to know the identity of the designated receiver. And these are the concerns of Alice. On the other hand, we may require two other properties from this system. That it's really sound, that the public set of certified agents, there is actually an agent that can open it. Yes, if I don't have certified agents, if I don't have some sense of public key infrastructure among the agents, in some implicit sense at least, then I can come up with my own key, encrypt it to myself, and send it and said, oh, there exists a key which decrypts this. And I keep the witness, the trapdoor, to myself. But this is not the goal of the applications that we have in mind for this. So it should be sound. There should be an actual certified receiver And we may also consider properties of the plaintext. The plaintext may have some cryptographic meaning. The plaintext may be a secret key corresponding to a public key that I put in escrow, or it may be a coin, or it can be one of many things. And then there is a requirement that it has a structure. So the plaintext must satisfy some publicly known relations. This should remind you of verifiable encryption that has this verifiability property. Okay. So in the literature, there are systems with which somehow solve partially some of these cases. There are all kinds of cases. I just list two cases: verifiability and security. These are called verifiable encryption, and anonymity and security is encryption with key privacy, and the other things that were considered. So this gives partial so partial properties were designed before. I didn't give yet the definition of security. I'll never give the definition of security, but I give more formal than the picture, yeah, than the thing. But please ask, yeah. Okay. I have a slide for that. So I will introduce and model the group encryption, including security. And I'll talk about necessary and sufficient conditions. I will talk about implementing actual scheme with reasonable efficiency properties, design public key system for it, and give implementation. So G scheme, of course, it's an encryption scheme in general, but it should have the following components. So parameter selection, this is usually security parameter and so on. And then it should have a component which is encryption scheme that the agents use. Since the agents should be certified in some way, there should be a signature scheme in the system. And since we required that there is a verifier that looks at the encryption and verifies things, and required properties from the clear text, then there may be a verifiable relation and some type of proof, zero knowledge proof of some sort, that will claim to the verifier that everything that has been done by this primitive is done right. So the first thing, so we require properties. So the first thing is correctness. This is usually the easy property, and it is. It means that if everything is done right, and somebody encrypts with the right verifiable relation, let's say X is public and W is the witness for the relation, and W is encrypted according to the method, then the verifier will accept. If it's a proof of knowledge, also the other things are implied, that there is an encryption that is certified, and so on. And then to your question, what does it mean security? So we follow the security definition of verifiable encryption schemes of the chosen ciphertext security type. So it's essentially a game between the adversary. I'm pointing here and I say adversary. Of course, this is self-explaining who is the adversary. And the idea is that it's a security in a sense that the adversary knows everything except a secret key in the system of a single agent. And then there is a performance of decryption queries on this secret key. And then further, the adversary chooses an element of the relation that that we want to encrypt. And then Alice, with the encryptor, with probability 50-50, either will encrypt the witness and will complete the encryption, the ciphertext as needed, or just perform a simulation of the encryption that has nothing to do with the relation. Let's say encrypt zero. And so this is then the nature. It's a little bit different than the usual CCA2 because there is this relation involved, but it's essentially telling encryptions from simulated encryptions, which and the after that, in the spirit of CCA2, the adversary may still query the decryption oracle with a prime. Prime meaning that the ciphertext produced by Alice is excluded from those queries, and then the adversary has to guess this up or down choice of Alice. What?
Why can Alice know that both cases some information about the secret key? Alice can add some information about the secret key.
To what?
To both in both cases.
What do you mean add some information about
they
the
secret key? Something about the secret key identifying it. So we'll know that
there's only one secret key here.
Yeah, so she could that she would add the agent.
There's only one agent. There's no issue of identity here.
So you wanted to say that you
I'm talking about just one property of the four that I presented before. There's only one secret key. Alice doesn't know the secret key. The guy who knows the secret key is the agent which resides in this shaded box. Alice cannot do anything with this. It doesn't have access to it. It's the encryptor. To just serve as the usually the encryptor is the adversary, which here she serves as the challenge bit. That's all. And now I'll go to something that you may have in mind, which is anonymity. Yeah, I understood that you had this in mind. So here the idea is again. Anonymity will be formalized as a CCA2 attack on the identity of the keys or the identity of the user. So here, provide the adversary with everything except the two secret keys that he's attacking. Also, since in this system we'll have potentially an opening authority that can open those keys, he doesn't have access to this as well, to the key of the opening authority as well. Then he performs decryption questions of those types, and then chooses what to encrypt. The encryptor, the innocent bystander, chooses one of the key, does the work. this time encrypts the actual witness in one of the keys, and then we allow after the fact decryption queries without referring to the cipher text coming from Alice. And here the adversary has to guess which public key was used by Alice. Alice is not the adversary, so that's the answer to your question. Okay? And this is the second property. The third property is the soundness and the verifiability of the system. And here we provide the adversary everything except the sign key of the authority that introduces agents into the system. So the adversary introduces those agents by choosing the public keys and getting signatures on them. And then the idea is for a choice of a relation, for a choice of an input statement to the relation, the adversary has to produce a ciphertext that Bob, the verifier, accepts and the adversary wins if this ciphertext actually is not something that is sound, is not something that will be open to one of the secret key corresponding to the public key. So in a sense, it's a combined attack on the signature scheme. Either the adversary can kind of generate a key and sign it on his own without the public record having the signature, or on the on the proof system. So this definition leads to a proof that goes against the proof system, or the soundness of the proof system, or the signature scheme. And again, he wins if he can generate this ciphertext that will pass. And of course, the property holds if the probability of winning is negligible. Okay. So this is the system and the properties, and then analyzing the system. So what do we need? We need adaptive chosen message secure digital signature for issuing those certificates, because of the last property, which is kind of soundness implies that, you know, if he can sign a message that was not signed, which is another public key, then he can perform attack against soundness. We need a CCA2 secure public key encryption for the security property, and it also needs to satisfy key privacy in a CCA2 for the anonymity property. And we need a tool like extractable commitment, which is the tool to take an NNP relation and turn it into a zero knowledge proof of knowledge. So, in the generic sense, we can take encrypt the witness and commit to the use public key used in the encryption, and the certificate on that public key, and we'll build a proof of knowledge that shows that the plaintext satisfies the relation, and the commitment to the public key and the commitment to the certificate are valid with respect to the verification key of the certification authority of the PKI. Yes. This is a sketch of a generic design. It requires a proof when you put them together. From? These are hypothetical schemes because we, for example, require a ciphertext. So here are the components. So if you take this ingredient, and you use them as the components, and then you do. So, for example, you need adaptive chosen message secure digital signature, and you take this component, which is CCA2 secure public key, which also satisfies key privacy, and you have extractable commitment. And now, so these are the ingredients, you put them together in this way. So I have commitments. I can generate zero knowledge proofs of knowledge. I have encryption. I have signatures. I assume the signature. There is a signature on each key of each agent, which is public. And these signatures have a public verification key. And then you can build this. Also, just from the definition, group encryption implies CCA2 encryption. Also requires proof, but it is, and also it also implies secure signatures. This is directly this it's secure signature on specific things of public key, but it's easy to translate it to general secure signature. Okay, so how much time do I have now? 20 minutes. I think 30. Huh? Yeah. Okay. So this was the introduction, and now efficient system for discrete log. So we want so the generic scheme was just a feasibility or plausibility. Proof, but now let's take a relation of we are giving an element and a discrete log in some group, and we can do it in a number of proofs, and build the system. So the first component in the system, as I said, is an encryption scheme which is both CCA2 secure and CCA2 anonymous. So we'll start with, since we are dealing with discrete log, it's natural to start with the Paillet trapdoor for discrete log. So the Paillet system is working in Z star N square, where N is an RSA number. And if you choose an X, small X up to N, you can recover it. This is the public trapdoor of Paillet. If you have H to the X, H is 1 plus N, this nth residue, you can, just by the binomial theorem working modulo N square, everything get cancelled except 1 plus XN. So you take minus 1, you take it mod N square, and then you take minus 1 over N mod N, and you recover X. And this is a public Paillet takes this element and kind of shuffle it and hide it, but we will not use Paillet directly. We'll use a variant, and the variant that we will use is the one that is more like Elgamal related. So we'll do the we'll hide this h to the x as a message inside El Gamal encryption g to the r y to the r, and we don't need factoring for this. We just need the discrete log of y base g, and then we can recover h to the x and then x. And we will work over chi sub n square, which and this will be generators in the, in this group, and these groups are elements that are both quadratic residues and nth residues. So it has an nth root and a square root, these t's. And to show that such thing is secure, Payet and the extensions, Kamenich and Shoup use these two. You rely on the problem of decisional composite residuosity. It's essentially the inability to tell this group, which is squares that are n residues, from a random element, from a random square in this in Zn square star. Okay? And then this type of El Gamal variant was extended to CCA2 secure. This is in the works of Kamenich and Shoup, when they created verifiable encryption for discrete log. So, okay, so we are here. We got so far. We looked at the systems, the design so far, in particular their system, and it's highly unlikely that the scheme can be used for our purposes, and the main problem is CCA2 anonymity or key privacy. In the sense that the Payet assumption, the DCR, is about kind of randomizing in the exponent, so not telling this m, if I change this m to another m and so on, it will be hard to tell. But the keys, when we use it, when we use y1 and y2, are kind of in the base, in the generator representation. And and it doesn't lead directly to this, because for this, so for example, El Gamal encryption is when everybody works with the different generator, the regular El Gamal, the assumption that actually leads to discrete privacy is decision Diffie-Hellman from the first talk this morning. So we need maybe we need the decision Diffie-Hellman in our subgroup, chi n square. And attempts to show, to take a mini Shoup directly and try to do it encounter difficulty because of the use of single generator and the committed nature of some of the operator of the public key. It's just a technicality. So now we attempt to use DDH over chi n square, and then we'll get key privacy. And so let's assume it. And when can we assume it, and why can we assume it? So if we take n that is a product of safe primes, then the order of chi will be exactly p prime times q prime, two large primes. And And then we also show that the Paillet assumption that we already need for privacy in this scheme actually gives computational Diffie-Hellman in this subgroup. And we don't know any modular arithmetic, you know, regular group where there is no small divisors of the order of that group, and where the computational Diffie-Hellman is hard and the decisional Diffie-Hellman doesn't hold or is easy. So this justifies the assumption. So in a sense, it's safe because it's similar to all the other groups to assume DDH. And then so we employ DDH. So now our encryption, so the key generator will choose some x1, x2, y1, y2, and z, and we'll compute c, d, and y. C is g1 to the x, g2 to the x, g1 to the x1, g2 to the x2, d, g1 to the y1, g2 to the y2, and y is g1 to the z. And if you know Kramer-Shoup, you can understand why we do it. G1 and G2 will be generators in chi n square, and the public key will be n, G1, G2, the C, D, and Y. So in general, n, because it's L-Gamal, n, L-Gamal like n, G1, and G2 will be public. And then this will be individual to the key, and HK is universal one-way hash function. So this will be key generation. Encryption are a random number from the number up to n over 4 will be chosen. U1 will be G1 to the R, U2 will be G2 to the R. E, which will be the encryption of M, will be Y to the R, H to the M. Again, similar to Kramer-Shoup. And then there will be this verifier, V, which will be C to the R, D to the R, the hash function of all the rest of the encryption, kind of tying all the elements together. I remind you what C, D, and Y are. Okay, and then we have ambiguity of representation, like in Rabin's scheme, when we work modulo n square. There can be two equivalent representations, so we always choose this operation just chooses the one in the smaller range. And this is because of the CCA2 nature, because you can just take the verifier and take the equivalent representation. N square minus the verifier is the verifier. It has the same nature, because we'll do squaring and you will. This is just, again, just a technicality. Decryption will check that the verifier is in the right range. This is similar to the Kramer-Shoup 12 o'clock. It's okay. Let it run in the background. You know, if it doesn't go with power, it goes with more power. So I'm going to China, so I put it on 12 o'clock. I don't want to change the time, so I changed the time of the virus scanner. So, and then if the checks goes, then it's this Paillet-like encryption in which we do this operation modulo n square. We do the squaring to get rid of ambiguities, but then we'll divide it out. And once we do this mod n square, we do the Paillet the pi a, which is the minus 1 over n in mod n, and we'll get back the clear text. So this new crypto system satisfies CCA2 security under decisional composite residuosity, plus the assumption that the hash function is universal one way. But it's not really an assumption, because we assume even more. And CCA2 keep privacy under DDH in this chi, this square root that are also n residues in chi. Okay? So now we have an encryption. So this is the first system of the Paillet type that has key privacy, regardless of our primitive. It's just good to know that it exists. So this solves the encryption system, which is good for our purposes. So now we needed a signature scheme. So that we can use efficiently, so it has to be algebraic, and luckily in the case of signature, it was available because Kamenish and Anna did the work for us, and it actually works here, which is the Kamenish-Lyshanskaya signature scheme, which is very nice. It's based on strong RSA assumption. It's kind of extension of RSA. It's algebraic, doesn't have random oracle, and doesn't have trees and history relations. And in this, it's still adaptive chosen message secure. The verification key is A0, A1, A2. These are generator in the quadratic residue mod, capital N. Capital N and N, small n of before, are not the same. This is the signature key for the authority that introduces agents. The signature key is the usual trapdoor for RSA systems, the factorization, the factors. And a signature on a message Y will be A, E, and R that have the following relation: A0, Y1 to the Y, A2 to the R. The eth root of it is A. And you publish A, E, and R. Of course, everything mod capital N. And the verification is A to the E equals A0, A1 to the Y, A2 to the R. Just checking. And it's a very nice scheme, adaptive chosen message secure. And you see that it really just exponentiation based, and we can attempt to use it. We will also use as a component Pedersen like commitments which are like G to the T, then Y to the T, something else, and they come from the same group and they hide the value that is committed to. And in the quadratic residues mod N, capital N, when we'll also use other representation in or something of order small n square, small n and capital N are our system parameters. So we need a representation for such a subgroup. And for the system, all agents share these parameters that are set up at the beginning of N, the generator G1, G2, the hash function. And the users compute their own private key and public key Y, C, and D. And they get a certificate from the certification authority that introduces users, which is a signature. Here is a signature. So these elements are being signed. So each one has a unique element, and this is a signature on Y. Okay? So So this is how the agent PKI is being set. And now encryption in this system of in the system, so there is this X which is public and the witness W is the discrete log. Yes, it's a special witness. And so we need an encryption of this W. So she picks a public key of her preferred agent. And Alice verifies the correctness of the certificate, this signatures. And for example, remember that this checks. And she encrypts the witness using the encryption scheme that we mentioned before. She commits to the public key that she used by presenting G to the T, Y1 to the T, Y2 to the T, C, Y3 to the T, D. So this is on the one hand, this is a commitment that hides the Y, C, and D, the public key that was used. When we use an opening authority, the opening authority will have the trap door to open Y, C, and T because he will have the discrete log of Y1 and so on, base G. So it has dual purpose here. So it can be seen as an encryption. She also commits to the certificate of this public key. So again, this commitment, which is in capital letters G to the K, and then Y0 to the K A, Y1 to the K G to the Y, Y2 to the K G to the R, and Y3 to the K G to the E. So you see that Y, R, and E are in the exponent. Look at this Y, and so we need, so you see this Y that I present here committed in the exponent G to the Y. Here was committed in the base, and A is committed in the base, but you know G to the Y, we need another commitment to this Y, so that it will be a faithful representation of Y and not Y modulo phi of capital N. So this is where we need the other representation, H to the Z for random Z, F to the same Y. And then using proofs, we can actually show that we know the same Y. So this will keep the real Y intact. And with this encryption and commitment, now she needs to prove that everything that was done is okay. So just the key points of the proof of knowledge: to show that the ciphertext is constructed using the committed public key and encrypts a discrete log of X. X is known publicly. That's one proof. The second proof shows that the commitment to the certificate contains a valid signature under the master key, this certificate authority key. on the value that is faithfully committed on this breach commitment, and show that the value of the breach commitment and the commitment to Y in the public key commitment also match. So this type of proofs of knowledge exist, essentially techniques for strong RSA-based soundness argument that started with Fujisaki Okamoto, and there were a few other papers on this, and double-decker discrete log commitments will be the technical ingredients to achieve those. And when you combine everything, you get a group encryption such that anonymity and security are based on DDH on the right groups and DCR on the encryption. And soundness and verifiability is basically based on the strong RSA assumption. So, and then I already hinted how to open the ciphertext. So the naive mode with small number of agents, everybody can just try to open and one of them will be successful. But if we want equivalent to group signature, there is a super agent authority that opens one of the commitments because it's actually encryption to it, and he gets the identity of the actual agents that can decrypt the ciphertext. And there is a separation between this authority and the agent that actually decrypts the ciphertext, separation of authorities. He's just in charge of identity, not opening the ciphertext. So he just reveals, and then we can build a hierarchy of commitments, reveals identity, reveals the message. So example of application. So I already mentioned this international key escrow. So we don't have to talk much about this, but it gives the right touch to it, that it really does not reveal the message, of course, because it's a key, and then does not reveal whom it is given to. On the other hand, you are sure that the key is there and that there is really a valid authority that can take things off escrow. And EMC is a storage company. Juan, you ask. It's a storage company. They build storage servers. So Safe Archive, so you'll see these slides in many, many future presentations of mine. So user submits encrypted record, the archive server checks the record can be made available to one of designated retrievers. So they are secure. If you pay for storage, you don't want some junk there, you want reasonable safety there, so you are assured that this is okay. Once you are assured that this is okay, you throw away the information that is the proof. You just take the actual ciphertext and the commitments and you put it there, and retrievers may get public access to the entire archive and can get their own records and nothing else, not even who else can read the other stuff. And you may see applications for that. Group signatures with designated trustees, that we can take group signatures. The opening authority can be, there is opening authority there, but if we have multiple authorities there, we can hide who is our favorite authority, and we can organize it in hierarchies or even ad hoc nesting of how our signature can be opened. Okay, so introduce group encryption as a new privacy primitive, modeling, modular construction in general, and efficient implementation for discrete logs. Discrete logs are very useful in cryptography. They can be signing key, they can be encryption key, and so on. And I mentioned some applications and for enhancing anonymity, increasing security, anonymous trust distribution, and so on. So I think I'm fine in time. Thank you.